From Impact Alpha, welcome to This Week in Impact, where we take you inside the world of sustainable finance and cover the agents of impact who are working towards a better future. I'm Brian Walsh. It's Thursday, March 28th. Helping me break down this week's impact news and insights is Impact Alpha's founder and CEO, David Bank. We'll be discussing the players likely to receive massive funding from the EPA to create a national green bank, how a $75 million basket bond is catalyzing climate lending to small businesses in emerging markets, and how people are investing in Brazil's impact economy. All that and more on This Week in Impact. Hi, everyone. I'm joined by Impact Alpha's head honcho, the one and only David Bank. Hi, David. How are you and how's your week been?
Hey, Brian. I'm great. And thanks for having me back. It's been busy as always. One of the highlights of this week was the second edition of our new Impact Alpha LATAM, a specialized newsletter covering Latin America. And it's chock full of deals and people and guest posts and a feature story that you teed up there about Brazil.
Yeah, well, we'll get to Brazil later in the show. But in the meantime, David, now 18 months ago, President Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, into law, which, despite its name, it's really one of the most significant climate bills yet passed by really any country. As we tape today, we are eagerly awaiting news from the Environmental Protection Agency on an intriguing aspect of that bill, the $27 billion Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. Now, this fund is intended to mobilize financing and private capital to address the climate crisis. Many are referring to this as a promoting green banks. So to start us off, can you help us walk through just what is meant by a green bank?
Yeah, they're, you know, eagerly awaiting is probably, you know, a small subset of folks who are kind of, you know, community development and climate infrastructure nerds. And that world has been, as you say, very eagerly awaiting this announcement from the EPA. It's a pretty wonky world. However, it is set to transform kind of community lending and community green infrastructure. And it's the biggest part of the Inflation Reduction Act in terms of outlays. Like a lot of that act is, you know, tax credits for electric vehicles or heat pumps or whatnot that come back later. But in terms of direct spending or direct budget outlay, this is a big chunk. And so the green bank idea has been around. Many countries have them. Many states have them. The U.S. Nationally has not had one. And so this gets us there in a kind of interesting way. It's not like a green bank, like you walk up to the marble building with the vault in the back. It's a distributed, virtual, decentralized financing system to get to help local lenders make loans for solar arrays and community solar and EV charging stations and energy retrofits on community centers and health clinics and a whole bunch of sort of green upgrades, very bread and butter kind of infrastructural upgrades that have not been easy to finance, not because they're not good investments or good loans, but because those lenders didn't know how to make those loans and didn't have enough capital to make it and didn't make it a priority. When $27 billion on the table, they start to make it a priority.
What does it mean to connect a national effort, federal dollars, and channeling it down to individual communities? How does that actually work in practice and who's going to be involved in this?
Well, it reflects the necessity of if you want to get decarbonization, of buildings, for example, leaky furnaces and old water heaters and no insulation and that sort of thing. And you want to get EVs into every neighborhood, not just into the affluent neighborhoods. You have to get money down to communities, to neighborhoods. Big banks, you know, tend not to do that. And small banks have been closing at a rapid rate. Into the breach has come these community development financial institutions, some of them nonprofit, most of them nonprofit, some of them for profit, that have built up their presence in low and moderate income and, you know, racially diverse Black and brown communities and know how to make loans. They have not been making green loans particularly because there hasn't been really a marketplace for that, but they are gearing up for this and they need technical assistance. They need to know how to underwrite an EV charger at your, you know, you've got a mom and pop, you know, grocery store, but you want to put two chargers in your front and raise your own, you know, monthly revenues, but you don't, you know, you need some money to install it. And how do you price that? How does a bank make a loan to that? That's the kind of thing that has to happen, not just, you know, once or twice, but thousands and thousands of times with lots of bankers and lots of borrowers doing lots of projects with lots of developers. It's going to be a huge kind of effort to make sure that all of that can happen on a very shortened time scale. And so they've got these coalitions, as you mentioned, that are going to help all that, you know, that themselves have been working this beat of these networks of CDFIs and other lenders, and it's going to help them, you know, get up to speed on that.
So we have this big pool of federal dollars going through these intermediaries who then channel the fund to local community financial institutions who actually cut the checks to make the investments out the door.
Exactly. So just to be you know, cut and dry about it, there's $27 billion, as you said, but it's divided into three chunks. The largest chunk is $14 billion. That's essentially what people are calling the green bank check, the green bank fund. And the folks who are vying to manage that and distribute it and create the mechanisms for that to flow down, as we said, to these community lenders, are there's these coalitions that have been formed of things like Enterprise, Community Partners, and LISC, which many people know as big nonprofit affordable housing developers, and Calvert Impact Capital, which we've had on Impact Alpha before, which has really pioneered, you know, ways to mobilize money for these kinds of things. They have the Calvert Community Note, people know, but they also have a whole loan syndication effort, and they've worked a lot with CDFIs about how to get their balance sheets improved. We've written about that through the COVID crisis when the CDFIs played such a big role. Other folks like self-help, now just called self-help, but people may know it as self-help credit union based out of Durham, one of the real pioneers in bringing banking and financial services for wealth building in low-income communities. So all these folks have formed up into different coalitions. They all put their proposals in of their different parts of this ecosystem that they're going to take responsibility for. Reed Hunt, people might remember as the former chairman of the FCC back in, I think, the Clinton administration, has run for many years the Coalition for Green Capital. He's been a real advocate for green banks. They have themselves a coalition of state-level green banks through which some of this money would flow. So all of the different capillaries of that for capital to flow through are geared up. And those three coalitions I just mentioned, Power Forward, Climate United, and the Coalition for Green Capital, we think are the leading contenders. There's several others. And as I said, there's other pots of money. And some of those other folks will distribute other things. There's something called Solar for All that's making loans and grants for solar installations in low-income neighborhoods. There's something called the Community Clean Infrastructure Accelerator, I believe, that is doing a lot of technical assistance and other kinds of advocacy sort of streamlining of things for helping them with permits and building plans and all the kinds of things that bollocks up these kinds of things in the past. They're trying to be proactive and think ahead. And how do you actually get the assistance so that the right things can happen? We'll see whether they succeed at that.
All right. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll discuss an effort to support green lending among small business lenders in Africa and Asia. Now, David, while community lenders in the U.S. wait for word on this federal funding for the green transition, Jessica Pothering reported this week on how there isn't yet a comparable source of capital to deploy globally, particularly in underinvested and climate-vulnerable countries. Now, small businesses in emerging markets already face a multi-trillion dollar annual shortfall in the capital they need. To address this, back in 2022, the UK government's Development Finance Institution, DFI, that's now known as the British International Investment, partnered with impact asset manager Symbiotix on a $75 million so-called basket bond to support green lending among small business lenders in Africa and Asia. The hypothesis was that there is unmet demand among small businesses in emerging markets for climate-specific loan products. So, David, now that the money has been deployed, what have we learned?
Well, This is just one of many efforts to try to address this gap. As you said, it's very similar, as you mentioned, to the financing gap in the U.S. on climate issues. Again, part of a broader financing gap in low and moderate income communities in the U.S. and also countries. So the idea has always been to get commercial lenders in place to broaden their aperture of what they consider, you know, investable or lendable projects. And part of that is reducing risks, you know, perceived risks. And some of that can be done with guarantees or loan loss guarantee, you know, reserves and that sort of thing. And then over time, models get proven out and, you know, lenders think, oh, there's a good business there. So smallholder farmers and agricultural businesses has always been one of the main examples there. You know, there could be a drought, there could be a glut, there could be insects, and then you're not going to get paid back. And so don't lend to farmers. Of course, farmers are the ones who actually need the lending to get from the planting season to the harvesting season. So, you know, that was always a clear kind of thing. And then, of course, just more or less, you know, small businesses forming are the backbone of any economy, but had the hardest time getting lending. And in fact, even the more digital ones, which are you'd argue would maybe get more kind of financing, some it's harder to finance because there's nothing to repossess, you know, like the inventory of a store, for example. So anyway, there's always been a small business lending gap in emerging markets. This was one attempt to fill it by getting the lenders, the local banks, to be able to take on more climate smart lending. Samanadi in India providing loans to smallholder farmers for climate smart technologies, or this Middle East bank in Kenya providing loans for commercial and industrial solar providers. Again, get the wheels of real commerce going. You know, there's real businesses to be had in green, in climate, in resilience, and you know it pencils out long enough. You just got to finance it. So get the financing going.
Yeah. No. Why is it necessary to label these as climate-specific loan products, and why is it instead framed as building the capacity of these lending organizations to support small businesses in emerging markets in general? Why does it have to have this climate-specific loan product framing?
Well, the cynic would say because climate is a hot topic, and the more you can attach your initiative to climate, the better off you're going to be. The actual, I think, more accurate is that all lending, and especially in emerging markets, which often are in the front lines of sort of the climate impact, all lending is climate lending now, or all lending needs to be climate smart lending. I mean, the obvious things that people always cite about not just rising sea levels, but wildfires and outages and water shortages. I mean, the climate risks are essentially the risks to your lending, and so you want to make sure that you're lending to things that are properly mitigated against those risks, but also that, more to the point, that are solutions to the problems that are going to be coming up for farmers and others. So, so just making sure that lenders are tuned into those risks and those opportunities is part of the impact here, not just getting the money out, getting those lenders to think through their business as having to be a climate smart business.
All right, that sounds good. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, Brazil and the rise of impact diplomacy. Finally this week, how the path to growth in Brazil runs through the impact economy. Now, growth in Latin America's largest country has largely stagnated in recent years, in part due to persistent inequality. The half of the population that identifies as Black has long faced barriers to credit, education, and the formal economy. But as Dennis Price reported this week in the Impact Alpha Latin America newsletter, investment in Brazil's Black entrepreneurs and thousands of impact businesses throughout the country stand to get a boost from Brazil's new National Impact Economy Strategy, or Inimpacto. Now, David, can you tell us a little bit about what the Brazilian government is attempting to do here?
Yep, Brian. I thought what was significant about Dennis Price's story this week, which led our Impact Alpha LATAM edition, as you said, is that impact economy is becoming a central part of your sort of economic planning all told, and particularly in Brazil. Now, of course, Brazil has a newish president, Lula, who has sort of breathed a lot of new life into some of these kinds of initiatives after many years of the previous president, let's just call it. And so they are also looking to, you know, come out of, as you mentioned, a sort of period of economic stagnation, and in particular, you know, sort of take a bigger place on the world stage. So they've got the G20 coming up, and Lula is the, you know, the Brazil is the rotating president of it this year, and then also the COP climate summit. So having projects to show off for both of those events is always a good thing if you're the host. So they have this National Impact Economy Strategy, or NIMPACTO, and its goal is to boost impact investing in the country from $11 billion a year to $120 billion with blended finance and these investment incentives and inclusive procurement, all the tools of the trade that, that agents of impact know so well.
Now, it's really interesting to me to see a country, especially a country the size of Brazil, to have a, as you said, this National Impact Economy Strategy. And you don't hear too many countries of that size having a national impact strategy. And I just wonder, are we seeing the rise of impact diplomacy here? You know, Brazil, as you mentioned, is holding the rotating presidency of the G20 this year. It's hosting the COP30 next year. And they said that through their G20 presidency, they aim to work with other countries to develop their own national impact strategies. And do you see this as a growing trend that other countries are beginning to really look at impact in their overall economic development policies?
Well, I mean, A, they should, and B, you know, there's sort of a history of this. A lot of initiatives that we now know, like the GSG, the Global Steering Group for Impact Investing, which has national advisory boards in many dozens of countries now, that all grew out of the UK's presidency of the G7 a number of years ago, where they were promoting these kinds of projects as well and these kinds of initiatives. And so it does help when there is high-level leadership to try to point the economy and financial markets in a different direction. Investors take signals from those leaders, and that's why they call them leaders. And the more that folks that can say that there is a way to use the tools of finance to, you know, restore the rainforest instead of deplete them, or to make sure that farmers can grow healthy food, you know, that's all, good. That's good economics. That's not some just philanthropic or aid proposition anymore. That's actually how your economy should run, to output, you know, and optimize for the kinds of things you want to see in your country. And so Lula, you know, is trying to show that you can actually have results that presumably not only, you know, boost the numbers and the results, but that citizens actually appreciate and value as well.
David, that all sounds like great lofty rhetoric, but what does it mean in practice?
The post that we have up on Impact Alpha, Dennis's post, has a number of video interviews that we did down at the FLE in Mexico a couple months ago. And there's a good cross-section of folks from Brazil. So there's a lot of material there. One example is Estimulo in Sao Paulo, which has provided something like $40 million to 3,400 businesses. And it has this exact characteristics I said. It has a credit guarantee backed by loan receivables, so that that Estimulo can take a sort of junior position in these stacks, and that brings in the commercial capital to make these loans. So again, it's creating these mechanisms by which the money can flow, ease the capital gaps, and then we're off to the races.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you so much, David.
Hey, Brian, thank you.
And thank you so much to all of you for listening to This Week in Impact. Now, David, what's the best way for people to contact us with any feedback they might have?
We can always reach us at podcast@impactalpha.com.
All right, great. Now, if you liked what you heard, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast and share it with a friend or colleague. And if you really want to help out, be sure to rate us and give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people find this show. This Week in Impact is a production of Impact Alpha and part of the Impact Alpha Podcast Network, bringing you investment news for a sustainable edge. For more exclusive stories about the world of impact investing and sustainable finance, join other agents of impact by subscribing to Impact Alpha. Just go to impactalpha.com/subscribe for full access. Thanks to our producer extraordinaire, Isaac Silk. I'm Brian Walsh, and we'll see you next week for more Impact.